everybody. Welcome to our show. I'm Liz.
And I'm Taylor. This is a podcast for and about the town we love.
And now we're talking Darien.
Hello and welcome. Today is Thursday, June 29th, 2023.
Long time.
We're back.
We're back.
We did take a long break. Apologies. It's been, I don't know, since the fall,
since we
recorded. I personally needed a break. A lot of changes in my life. I'm back at work now. But we're hoping to find our rhythm again and come back to you with things that we're really excited about. And this particularly was something that was on my mind. So I'm excited to have this be our comeback episode.
Yeah, on college admissions here. And we have two guests tonight. I'm so pleased to bring you them. We have Kristen White and Dina Merowitz. Kristen is an independent educational consultant. She's got 15 years experience and is the author of two educational books. Dina Merowitz is a partner at Bertram Group. She was a lawyer and has her master's in social work. She was also the associate director of admissions at Columbia Business School. So two very well qualified individuals here to speak about this subject matter.
Yeah, it was a fascinating conversation. You know, among other things, we covered how do Darien students compare to the rest of the country? What does a complete college application look like? And when should our kids start that process? Testing and grades. What are the expectations today in the new test optional world?
Yeah, that world, that's crazy. The whole idea of test optional. Yeah.
What are the popular schools with Darien kids today? And how hard is it to get into both those and the quote unquote elite colleges and universities on their lists? And one that came up for us is getting a B in an AP course better than getting an A in a standard level course?
Yeah.
Stay tuned for this and more. But first, let's introduce our sponsor tonight.
Yes, totally. Our sponsor for today's episode is Riley Volvo Cars Stamford. If you are like me, buying a new car can feel so stressful. Ugh, the anticipation that I feel of, am I getting the best deal or not, leaves me dreading the experience and also what I might be leaving on the table deal-wise. So take that worry away, that stress, that hassle out of your situation and come shop for a new car at Riley Volvo Stamford. They are family-owned, operated by one of our very own Darien residents. There's no haggling, just full transparency. These guys are your friends, neighbors, classmates, even teammates. Make the shopping experience for buying a new car or used car pleasant and head down the street to Riley Volvo Cars Stamford.
Nicely done. And let's get to it. Kristen and Dina, welcome. You two are both incredibly qualified, and thank you so much for joining us. I feel so lucky that we have your expertise at this table. I mean, the thing that is on my mind most, I guess, in today's world is how are Darien kids being received by American colleges and universities today?
I think they're doing really well. It's been a really tough environment since COVID. There's been a huge increase in applications at very selective schools and moderately selective schools.
Why? Why is there an uptick?
One reason is test optional admissions. Since we're removing the requirement for testing, it's leaving it open to more students who feel that they're qualified. And there is a stat out there in across the country that of college-bound high school graduates, about 40% have an A or A-minus average. So if you don't have to think about testing and you have this big number of high-achieving students, they're applying more broadly. So more applications makes it more difficult for everybody.
I had no idea that testing was optional. Did you, Liz?
Yeah. I mean, I want to get into testing, but yeah. But I will say before, I did know testing was optional. Yes.
Let's just ask one follow-up question. Like, is it actually optional? I mean, if you want to go to like a high-end school, are they really letting kids in because someone gave them an A in some school that they don't have any kind of frame of reference for?
Well, there are a couple of different ways to answer that. There are some schools that are no longer test optional that became test optional during COVID when everybody became test optional because many students weren't able to take the exams at all.
So temporarily that made sense.
Those schools, there are now schools that are test blind, meaning that they will not consider testing at all. All of the University of California schools, the California State schools, Reed, Dickinson, Catholic. There are some other schools that will not consider testing. But I'm still advising my students, the students I work with, to take the test. If they can take the test, practice the test, prep for the test, and do well in the test, I believe it will help them in the admissions process.
We're diving deep quickly, but I read the articles that were posted on your website, Dina, and one of them referenced something about the optional portion of an application. And they're like, it's not really optional.
It's not really optional.
You need to do it all.
Right. I mean, not every student can get those tests, those tests done. And that was the reason for many students. Not only was it that they couldn't get to a testing center, but students from underserved areas were, you know, no longer even able to stay in school, had to return home to take care of siblings or to get a job. And so the idea of putting the extra burden of also having to take the test was too much.
Sure.
So many of the colleges have stayed test optional.
But can we give an example of that, though? Because, Chris, I know when we spoke, you showed us that. Because I was like, listen, if you're going to get like a 36 in your ACTs, you're submitting it. So,
Absolutely. So everywhere,
even if you get like a 32, but you gave me the instance where people with somewhat high test scores still may not submit it. What is that scenario?
Right. You can look up the average ACT score at any college. So if you find that at Boston College, it's 34, 35, and you have a 31, then you may think, well, maybe I shouldn't submit it. Whereas four or five years ago.
34 and 35 is extremely,
extremely high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Well, what's happened is that as the colleges have become test optional, students who have the high scores are choosing to submit. So the test range has also increased. I think mm-hmm. Stanford's last year, for example, was 34 through 36.
Yeah.
So, you know, or it might have even been 35 and 36. And the point is that students who do very well and score a 33 have the option not to submit that score. And so you want to be strategic about where you are submitting your scores. However, scoring well in the tests can be more important in some ways now than it was before.
Well, and then when you guys opened this up, you said test optional. And also at the same time, we talked about the average GPA of kids nowadays. And it sounds like you're seeing a higher degree of GPAs across the country. Is that true?
Yes. Well, I don't know if it's higher over what time, but it is a general stat that about 40% of students have an A or A minus average. And I can tell you here in Darien, every high school has a school profile that lists the students' GPA, test scores, all sorts of good information. You can find that on the Darien High School website. So that's where I'm getting this information. For the class of 2023 at Darien High, 20% of the students had a 4.0 or above. And then 44% of the students had a 3.75, which is roughly an A minus or above.
So Almost half the student body, Darien Public School.
But you can achieve greater than a 4.0 now, correct?
Yes.
Like that used to be the ceiling, but today, for all of us that are catching up like I am, you can achieve how high? Like how high does it go?
Well, I think the highest GPA listed on the profile was a 4.3,
but
only 8% of the students had above a 4.0. So really there were a lot hovering around.
Now, is this a new pandemic in itself of grade curb inflation? Yeah, is that are we seeing this? I see mixed reviews on both of your face.
I don't think it's new. I think it's been like this for a while. I don't know when. Not new in the last 3 years.
So a child can achieve an above 4.0 grade point average by doing very well in AP class? Is that the only way to do it?
Honors
or AP. Now, there's a difference between honors and AP, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
What's the difference?
Well, at Darien High, honors and AP classes are both given the same amount of bump. So an AP test is a standard curriculum with a test in May. It's generally for juniors and seniors. And then there's some honors classes for sophomores and freshmen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think what's important to remember is that each school has its own profile card, like Kristen was saying. So an A grade at one school may not be exactly what an A grade is at another school. But the idea is that with the removal of testing as a requirement, many people make the assumption that, wow, I have A's and I know that you need A's. I'm an A student. And so I'm going to apply to very selective colleges. And if you think about every high school across the country and the percentage of students that have A's and think, well, I'm an A student, so maybe I should try for Harvard or Duke or Vanderbilt or University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, that just means that all of those students are now submitting to schools where they might not have before because their scores, their test scores might not have been in range.
Right.
So the profile is kind of like another lens through which the admissions counselors look at applications, correct? So like if you have an A from a school that doesn't have as strong a profile as Darien, that kid doesn't have as good a chance. Like you can be the best student in the world, but going to a school that doesn't have a good profile and have a hard time getting in.
It's not used that way, but it is meant to allow the colleges to know the rigor of classes that a high school offers, the amount of APs that the high school offers, so that when they look at a student who has, you know, strong grades from one school, they can understand the rigor of that high school versus a student that may have slightly less strong grades at a more rigorous high school.
Right. Okay. And it also helps them understand the individual student and what courses he or she selected to take at the school. So, you know, there's a student could have a 4.0 in all easier classes versus another student that has a 4.0 taking AP in harder classes. And that would be more on point of what a selective college would look for.
So how do you advise the child who says, you know, I want to take an honors or an AP class because I want to get into a good college? And I think is it better to get a B in that class than an A in a regular class?
It's better to get an A in that class.
Yeah. In the harder class? Yeah. Well, yes.
Yes. But I do advise students, really, I advise them to push themselves to take the most rigorous classes they can do well in, and especially in the areas that they're interested in. So, yes, I would say I'd rather see a B plus in an AP class than an A in a regular class.
Okay.
And the colleges really want to see students willing to challenge themselves, because one of the things that in admissions offices we worry about is, okay, is a student going to be able to handle the rigor of the classwork at this college?
Of course.
Right.
So one of the reasons we know that people move to Darien is the education here. Right? It's supposed to be a top of the country public education. And I don't know if this is a trend or if this is rumor of it, but I feel like we're seeing possibly more kids, families move here and send kids to private schools. And I've also heard that alongside this trend that we're seeing less kids get into the Ivy League, the top tier schools. I use Ivy League, but I should just say top tier. So I'm curious to you guys if these are rumors, or if these are actual trends, and
right.
If the latter, why is that?
I think the first, are there fewer students from Darien High getting into more selective colleges? I think that's true across the board. So that's the same conversation that parents at private schools and boarding schools are hearing also, because of this tsunami of applications that happened recently, and that colleges are looking far and wide for different types of students. So if there's something that's changed recently that people see in Darien, I wouldn't think that it's specific to Darien.
Okay. And what about the move to going, in that sense, like just to you know, beat a dead horse here, going private versus going, you know, kids going to GFA or going to a Taft, a boarding school, or just going to Darien Public School, which is, again, one of the best in the country.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, so my client base is really very much so boarding school and private school kids. And I think there's an additional consideration there, is that if you're going to a very rigorous high school, whether it's a private high school or whether it's a public high school, you're competing against really other highly achieving kids. And so then it can feel a little bit like the Olympics, right? If somebody has a 1560 on their SATs as opposed to a perfect score, well, you know, should we be trying for that perfect score? So I think there's a sense that you have to be pretty perfect all around in order to be able to be selected by the schools. But the truth is that, you know, many, many, many perfect applicants because of the number, or so-called perfect applicants because of the number of applications, you know, you're competing, your peers are also students who are really highly achieving. And the colleges are not admitting double or triple the amount of students, right? So Stanford's admissions rate last year, I think, was like around 5%.
Right.
So that's five out of 100.
Stanford University.
Yeah. Okay. Right? So that's 5 out of 100 students. You can imagine the rigor and grades and scores of those students. And still only 5% of them are being accepted.
That's crazy. And do you guys have access to, or is it public to know what the profile card looks like for Darien High School? And how does it compare to like a Greens Farms or some of the other elite boarding schools in the area?
Well, I think most of the schools have it online. I have one data point from Greenwich Academy, since I'd mentioned the GPA range. So at that school, 37% of the students have a 4.0, and then 83% have an A or A minus. So the majority of the students there are A or A minus students, which isn't surprising because they have an admissions process. It doesn't necessarily mean that that's any easier for them. They're still that A or A minus student competing against A or A minus students from high schools across the world. And I think to your question of why do some Darien parents consider private school, it's usually for a variety of reasons and not necessarily related to college admissions. I think I've seen people look at schools for opportunities even in sports. It's very difficult to make the Darien High sports teams, but at private school and boarding school, anyone can be on a team. You can be in the theater production. There's a lot of opportunities. Sometimes students benefit from smaller classes, relationships with teachers. I'd say there's other reasons.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, I guess maybe I don't fully understand the profile card. Is it really just what you said, like how many people are, what percentage of the student body is achieving a certain test grade? Yeah. Or are we talking about like, how hard is it to get an A in Darien versus to get an A in another school?
Right. It doesn't have that. It's some common data points, and it's about a 3-page PDF that's sent to the colleges with a student's application.
But doesn't that incentivize like schools to give more A's? I mean, would that help the kids?
I don't know.
I don't, you know, I think you've got to think about your audience. Mm-hmm. You know, we're pretty smart in college admissions.
I am not suggesting otherwise.
And, oh, no, I know. But sometimes, you know, I think there are questions about, like, can we game this system? Can we apply to this program and then transfer into this program? Would that be better? Or, you know, should my son or daughter take this class pass fail just so that this lower grade doesn't show up? And I think we, in admissions, we're looking at everything. You know, we're not just looking at the A's. We're not just looking at the number. When you have an A grade and you're applying to Columbia, we are recalculating based on the rigor of your high school and the classes you chose to take and a myriad of other...
Yeah. Let's talk about what else fills out the package, right? Like extracurriculars, for instance. Like what? How do you guide your clients to fill out that resume, essentially? And how early should it start?
Right. Well, it's ninth grade and on is what they're looking at in the college application. And I think as consultants, we're guiding students to find their passions and interests. And that's really one of the fun parts about the job, working with a young person and giving them some suggestions of things they might like to do, whether it's volunteer work or getting more involved in school.
Yeah, I sort of steer away from the word passion, just because I feel like it can put a lot of pressure on kids. I mean, I think my passions throughout high school, throughout my life now as an adult, have changed. You know, I used to love to embroider, and I'm not doing that anymore. Or, you know, so anyway, I think. But what I'm trying to encourage students to do is to find things that they authentically love or enjoy, and if they're doing something that they don't like anymore. For example, they've been swimming since they're 8.
Right.
And their parents are afraid to let them stop swimming because it's going to look really great on your application. I say, let them stop swimming. It's really great to learn about something else that you may not have been able to explore. And don't worry about the fact that it's not, you know, looking perfect. Because I think in college admissions, we know that students learn just as much about what they love to do from what they don't love to do.
Yeah. How many times, I mean, this is touching on another subject I'm really interested in. How often are you seeing kids who are doing what their parents are suggesting they do versus how much they really want to do something? And honestly, which one is right? Because, you know, there's a chance that, I mean, your child wants to be a video game developer. I'm just saying, maybe that happens. And you're like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe you should go to business school. Like, how often do you guys have that conversation? And how often do you see kids, you know, pretending to love something they have no interest in?
I feel like the families that hire a consultant usually are interested in having someone else interact with their child and have them be open to new things. So I don't find as many who are, I can't think of anyone who really was putting their values for activities and interests on their student.
Yeah, I think I get the question a lot from parents, what looks better? But I answer it in just the way that I have. I do think it's important to have activities and be engaged, because colleges are communities. And so they're in admissions, we're looking to make sure that, you know, as students graduate, that other students are going to be part of the vibrant community on campus that we talk about. So you do need to show engagement, because that person who's been in the, you know, theater club is now going to be graduating. And so we need to find somebody else to be in that. And of course, some schools have institutional priorities about the things that they're looking for and the types of students that they're looking for. But I try to steer parents and students away from worrying as much about that, because it's sort of an unknown, and really focus on, okay, let's just talk about what might make you tick. If you don't know now because you've been doing sort of what your parents have said that you should be doing, and if you're happy with it, that's great. But if you're not happy with it, let's start something new.
Yeah. And sorry, I don't want to overly control this. Liz, please dive in.
I want to get into the specifics of putting together this application, as you kind of, this package you talk about, Taylor, and how it actually looks on a full application when you finally get there. And I also want to talk about how you fit a kid to a, you know, different colleges. But before I get into that, can I just circle back? Let's talk a little bit more about the parental motivation here. We came up and we started talking about like why a parent would choose a private school or a public school or any of these decisions. You know, it starts early. My question then goes, what is the parental motivation stepping back and having your kid go to college? What are the reasons you're seeing parents push college nowadays? Because I feel like the expectation or outcome of college has kind of changed than when we went 20 years ago.
Well, I think
history and the price model, by the way. Yeah. So that has a big factor that's different now. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, historically, I think we saw this first shift in the 50s, really, where college could be something that families could afford to do for the first time. So if they themselves hadn't gone to college, they were able to sort of move up and
in society.
Yes, in culture and in our culture, in American culture. So college became more valuable. And I think I do sometimes work with families. I've worked with families before where I really do ask the question, you know, is college the right next step for you, or is it even ever going to be the next step for you, which sort of goes to some of the things that Kristen does with gap year, I think. Right. But it is not for everyone.
Because the background, what I'm thinking that Tara and I kind of had this offline discussion before we even met today, is that like the outcome of college, the jobs that kids are getting nowadays, for ones that are going to college, they're going to elite colleges compared to ones that are going to small unknown colleges or community college, or even kids that are just skipping that and going to the workforce. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm seeing a drastic difference for that $100,000 a year someone might be paying. So I just wonder like what sometimes the motivation is, and if you kind of help guide those motivations. Right. It sounds like, Dina, that you've asked those questions, and Kristen, maybe you get those as well.
True. Well, and I think internships are so important now that does cut away some of the difference that students going to elite colleges or versus a less elite school, if they have great internships, they can get a great job. So I don't think it is all about career, but there are still many careers where a bachelor's degree is needed. So there is still
that. So parents are coming to you thinking like, for my kids to get the next step in life, they need to check this bucket list off.
Right.
Right. I mean, certainly where we live, right? Yeah. If you think about our communities and the number of college-educated adults, you're going to see parents don't want that for their kids. I love this organization that's based at Stanford, the School of Education, called Challenge Success, which really focuses on dispelling the myth that students who go to elite colleges are more successful than students who go to schools that are less selective. And that's really important because the research that they've done, and they've done great research on this, and they have a white paper that you can get from their website, shows that really the most important things that pave the way for a student's success at graduation from college is engagement with a mentor, really experiential learning, and really thriving in their environment, choosing an environment that really works for them. And so I think a lot of people don't think about that. I think they think it's about the name brand. Right. And definitely the name brand is important to families, and I recognize that. And when I work with families and they say, I want my kid to go to a prestigious school, I said, well, there will definitely be prestigious schools on your son or daughter's list. There will also need to be all kinds of different schools, because everybody needs to have a range of colleges on their list for it to be balanced.
Right.
That's awesome. I love that not only are you saying that, but you're backing up with research, which I'd love to go and read. By the way, before I keep thinking of it and forgetting again, when you talk about elite schools, which ones are they?
You know, I hate that word. I mean, it comes up all the time. I don't
say, because it's more than just the Ivies, right?
Oh, right. Yeah. Schools that are less than 10% acceptance rate, would you say?
Yeah. Which is...
It's a lot now. Mm-hmm. It's getting to be a bigger number.
But what schools are popular with Darien kids these days?
Well, I'd say we've seen a little bit of a shift to the South. There are students interested in Wake Forest, seems Clemson. Even Auburn, University of Miami has been really popular recently.
Interesting.
So Bucknell, I think, continues to be popular too in the Northeast.
Mm-hmm. Have our Ivy League acceptances stayed pretty steady over the decades, or are we up or down as compared to history?
I don't know, actually. It's a good question.
You know, and I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head, but I also, we know that admissions has become so much more competitive that the numbers are smaller, right? So it didn't used to, you know, Stanford did not used to have a 5% admissions rate, and now they do.
The acceptance rate is lower, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
But they're accepting the same number of kids, right? Like population of the school is probably the same.
Right. The colleges haven't increased the amount of students they're accepting.
Right.
I did read, though, that they said in one of the articles, again, that I read on your website, was saying that the Ivies do tend to accept more athletes. Is that true? Like, or you have a better shot at getting in if you're an athlete?
Yeah, there's certainly many athletes at Darien High who get in. And that's one of the things, if you look at the college acceptances at many of the schools in Fairfield County, New Jersey, New York, a lot of the students going to Ivy Leagues are committed athletes.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about that, because Taylor can't help herself there. She was too excited to ask. I do want to hear about when you talk about the package and the athletic package. I mean, that is definitely a move, right? To have a kid being a stellar athlete or stellar in any area, whether it be theater or in music or.
Is it even enough to be like, you know, two sport varsity captain, winning the states to get into an Ivy League school with a good GPA? Or do you also have to be speaking three languages and doing in Model United Nations and all sorts of other stuff?
You're competing against a lot of kids with perfect grades and scores and lots and lots of opportunities. I mean, so it is, I try to prepare my clients for that. Even if they are one of those students at the very top, again, you're still competing against many, many more students that are like that. And only 5% of those students are being accepted, or 10%. Right. So it's those schools are not safe. You can't say, oh yeah, that's where I'm going anymore.
How much time do you guys spend coaching kids on managing the stress of all this?
I do a lot of that. I do it with parents and with kids.
Too, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And
what's your best advice?
You know, my best advice is that, and I just went through this with my own daughter last year, that you can get really wound up in what you're hearing. Sort of like the pool that we're all swimming in is very high stress around here and feels very, very competitive. So it's not easy, but I think it's really helpful to shut out that noise, mm-hmm. right? And just pay attention to your son or daughter. And really, every parent I talk to says, I just really want them to be happy.
Right.
And so you just have to sort of keep boundaries and think about and really consider, okay, well, what is it that makes my kid happy? And are you on target? Are you being reasonable with what's really best for your kid? Or are you letting the other stuff sort of be too important?
Yeah.
And I think it's not just Ivy League and ultra selective schools. There's many students in Darien that are interested in schools like Clemson mm-hmm. or University of Miami, and those are difficult to get into too. So it's not that they're all trying to get into these super elite schools. And I think that they are looking very much at finding a comfortable life for themselves at school and finding an environment where they'll be happy and successful. Yeah.
That's why I love the title of your book. It's not the student. It's not the school. It's the student. Is that right?
It's the student, not the college.
Right. General idea. about that. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's to what you were saying, Dina, earlier about, and I feel like I see this in so many other aspects of life, right? You can put two pieces together, like the student with a great college and they can block and tackle and do a great job and get a decent GPA, but they're not thriving, right? Like, and only when you're really thriving and like embracing everything about that experience, do you really get to like the next level and then find a passion for your next, like your career and find the right job. And I feel like you really leverage the experience of college rather than just checking the box.
Right.
Well, I think it's important too, to think, and there's not just one perfect college. I really don't like the term like dream school, right? Because there are, when I work with students, we come up with a list of 8 to 10 schools. And every single one of those schools has to be a school that the student wants to go to if they're accepted. And so in that way, it's about broadening your mind. I think this is one of sort of the things that I'm trying to encourage parents to understand, because I really believe this, that you can step off the path. It doesn't have to be, okay, I go from Darien High School to Dartmouth to a job at Goldman Sachs and to a happy life. There are lots of different ways and different paths that people can take. And I don't say that in like in a fairy tale way. I said there's nothing wrong with that path, but I just want people to know that there are other ways to get there, to career success and to happiness. And, many of us, like when I graduated from college with a degree in psychology, I didn't know that I would end up being a college admissions consultant, right? So those of us that are worried, like, well, what are they going to be when they get out? Well, they might change their minds when they get out. They might go in several different directions and still be happy, successful people.
Right. And I think also in looking for a college, it's not just about the outcome and the career, but also that growing up experience, the rite of passage. And I do find a lot of kids really, especially since COVID, are craving community. They want to go to a college where they'll have friends and activities and things to do. And sometimes when they're evaluating colleges, they see maybe a big state college with a football game going on and they think, that's what I want. I want that big school because I'm seeing all these connected kids there. But that might not be what's right for them. They may benefit from what Dina mentioned, where if you have a mentor and big involvement and seeing a lot of the same people at a smaller college, that might be what's right or better for someone. So for each individual, it's different, but I do find that they're really looking to be connected and to find a home and to be happy in college.
Okay, let me just say, there may not be one perfect college, but there could be one perfect car dealership. Riley Volvo Cars Stanford, our sponsor for today's episode. These guys have an omni-channel experience where you can seamlessly move between online and in-person shopping. Riley Volvo Cars Stanford also has great summer deals going on right now, and they have availability on their lots, a selection of pre-owned cars and electric cars, including the XC40 and the C40 Recharge. How about that? So thanks again to Riley Volvo Cars Stanford for your support, and to Jameson Riley and his family for providing such great local business to us all, and also being an involved altruistic family in Darien.
Yes.
So thanks to the Rileys. All right. So we're here today with Dina Merowitz and Kristen White, two independent college advisors and experts in the field of college admissions. Let me get back to our discussion on the college selection process and how a family curates the best set of colleges or universities that's most appropriate for their child. Dina, let's go to you. As college consultants, how do you come up with this? You said like a list of, it was 18 colleges maybe? Or
8 to 10.
Oh, 8 to 10. Okay, 8 to, okay, that's even more interesting. 8 to 10. There are thousands of these little colleges out there, maybe in Iowa and small things. How do you guys, you know, position yourselves to be, I know you don't position yourself to be an expert in this, but how do you guys find these schools for kids when you're hearing over again the Dartmouth, the BC, the Clemson, you know what I mean? The big names. How do you find the schools that would be the right fit?
Well, I ask a lot of questions in our first meeting from the student and the parent, and I'm not expecting the answers to be written in stone. I'll be asking the same question again, maybe 6 months later, mm-hmm. and giving them a chance to do some research and questioning assumptions that they have about why they want a certain college. And if they have a few in mind that they really like, I may ask them for a little homework assignment to tell me why, what it is that you like about that college, other than they know someone who went there or general reputation. And I think also in talking to the parents too, to, you know, distance from home is a question. Not everybody is willing to have their child go to Iowa or California. Sometimes they want a driving distance. Another thing is financial fit. Sometimes parents are looking for a certain price range or options for lower cost colleges. So that would be on the list too, if that was important.
So if parents have the ability to hire an independent educational consultant, is there an expectation that you guys will be able to find these schools more so than you could do on your own? Like if I'm out there, I mean, how many schools can I possibly find? But if I come to you guys, am I paying for the knowledge of you guys to know these small one-offs here in a blue moon, or is that an unrealistic expectation?
Or what is the value prop of hiring a consultant?
How right. about that? Well, I think everybody, parents have different reasons for hiring consultants. And for some, it's that they want our knowledge of colleges and programs and majors, or maybe application strategy. For others, it might be that they want to take a step back from the process and maintain a good relationship with their teenager and have someone else there to stay on top of them about deadlines and things. So there's all sorts of reasons. I don't think it's really finding the obscure school. Most of the colleges on the list that we give them, they would have heard of, but they just may not know why it's a fit for them.
I think that's right. I mean, I do make an effort, and I think Kristen and I both belong to an organization called the IECA, which is the Independent Educational Consultants Association. And in order to be a member, be a professional member of the organization, you have to have visited, I think, 30 schools before you
become a member.
Right. And then, but I try to visit about 20 schools a year. Including those little
new schools or ones like some revisits, some new.
I just visited a college in Galesburg, Illinois, Knox College, right? That you might not know about, but that it's important for me to sort of know not only about the ones that, yes, come up on my students' list all the time, but also ones that they might not know about. There's a great book out there called Colleges That Change Lives, that has a lot of colleges that families don't know about as much as the colleges that you might be hearing about from your kids or your friends.
So if we could just get to some of like the blocking and tackling, you said 8 to 10 is like the sweet spot for applications.
It's what I feel like is manageable for kids, because you are working on not just the application itself, but many schools have supplemental essays. Many schools will either will use interviews as an evaluative part of the admissions process as well. So I work with students to prep for those interviews. It's a lot of work. If you are applying to 10 schools and there's 3 essays each, that's 30 essays plus your Common App essay, plus possibly doing interviews. You know, it could be it's very stressful. So I think kids get burnout.
Reusing essays?
You can figure out ways
sometimes.
Yeah. Yes.
And then there's some colleges that don't have a supplement.
Right.
I'll have my students will sometimes apply to more.
Oh yeah, right.
And particularly if they're applying for the ultra selective schools, because there is some randomness there. So sure. I have a student who is at Dartmouth, but he was rejected from about 8 or 9 colleges. So
it's crazy.
For, that surprises people.
For essays, mm-hmm. do you guys recommend people hire a coach? They work with their parents. What is the hot ticket advice for writing these essays, both common and
content wise?
Dina and I think we both work with our students on the essay, so we have our own process with students. But it's not necessary. You know, there are some great resources out there online. There's the College Essay Guy that has a podcast, and he has a lot of great information. And the kids really like it. There's videos and a lot of short little ways to kind of learn about the essay and work on it. There's also a class at the high school in the summer on essays. There's a lot of ways to go about it.
Content wise though, I mean, is this, you're just trying, what is the goal? The goal is to make them like fall in love with you. The goal is to make them feel bad for you. The goal is for what?
The essay? You mean the goal of the essay?
Yes.
Yeah. I think the goal of the essay is to show a small snapshot of who you are and the way you think about something. And I think there's a lot of misinformation about the essay. The essay is not a list of accomplishments. It's not a please take me. It's not
about the college major.
It's not about the college major. I've had students write incredibly successful essays for all kinds of schools about gardening, about making dinner with their dad, about what they see on the train when they're taking the subway to school, about beekeeping, mm-hmm. about a 3D puzzle project they worked on. So, you know, the colleges are seeing your academics, they're seeing your extracurriculars, they're seeing your achievements. But what they might not see is, who is this person in a very small way? So the essays don't need to be, yes, I created an organization that, you know, found a cure for this disease. They need to be about something like that student noticed that was interesting, that the college can say, oh, now I have a better idea of how that student thinks.
Like a fingerprint.
Yeah.
Oh, so going back to the value proposition of working with a consultant, you guys can help kind of narrow a kid's, there is a strategy to putting together a complete application and putting your best foot forward.
Yes. Sure. I mean, I make sure that, you know, we work really hard on the essay. We work really hard on the activity section of the Common Application, which asks for students to list their activities, not in chronological order, but in order of importance to them. So the colleges could really see where those students are going to be interested in engaging in their college community. Mm-hmm. So we really do think about those things. And, you know, I also make sure things are neatly done and thoughtfully done.
Right.
You know, that T's are crossed and I's are dotted and there's not grammatical mistakes. I mean, grammatical mistakes are okay. Like, I think sometimes
sometimes it's their voice.
Right.
To be that
yes.
Way,
yes.
And that's good.
Right. Yes, that's exactly right. But that, you know, an application looks like it was really well thought about.
What is the strategy with demonstrated interest? I've heard this phrase used, and I don't know what that really means. But I assume it has part of this, it goes into the overall strategy of your application.
It used to mean visiting the college in person. Then with COVID, they all created online tours. So there is some tracking of whether you click on things on their website or tour.
Oh my gosh.
The ultimate demonstrated interest is early decision, because then the student is committing to going there. So that's really the
high. Yes, that really helps, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for the colleges that consider it. It really, really helps.
Oh, so not all do.
No.
Not all do. And I sort of compare it to dating a little bit. Like, the colleges, when you're from the outside and you're applying to college, your big question is, you know, are they going to say yes to me? Are they going to say yes? When you're working in admissions, you are cognizant of your competition, the other schools that are your competition. And so your question is this student going to accept our offer if we make them an offer? And all the colleges need to release the numbers of offers they've made and the percentage of students that accepted those offers. That's called yield. So we want to know in admissions, oh, okay, are you really going to come here if we make you an offer? And one thing that reassures us is if you've visited a college campus, if you've done an information session and tour, if you've registered as a prospective student, if you've looked at social media of that college. So those things are really important.
So then as part of the demonstrated interest, is it ever writing letters to the admissions, or is that old school? If I say like, hi, I'm so-and-so, like, nice to meet you, I'm interested in your school. Is that a completely dated thing? Because I've heard kids mention that they still reach out to admissions.
Right. Yes. There's sometimes a regional rep and they have visits to the high school and it's great to get to know them. And sometimes students follow up with questions. And so that does happen.
Making contact with that regional rep, I think is helpful and nice. Yeah. And it brings a face to a name. So yes, I encourage that for students.
Is there a limit to the number of early applications you can submit?
That is a very complicated question.
Because I'm thinking, why wouldn't you just apply everywhere early?
Well, some of them are early decision binding. So you agree that if you're accepted, you will attend. And the college counselor at the school has to sign off on that. And you agree to pull all your other applications if you're admitted. So it's complicated. Okay. But early action colleges don't tend to have restrictions. So then you could.
There are some colleges that have what's called single choice early action or restricted early action, in which they limit, if you apply to their school early action, you may not submit another application, either early action or early decision, to any school but a state university. Okay. So
Georgetown is one.
Georgetown is one. Stanford does that. Harvard. And that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah, wow.
But when we talk about like Stanford, Georgetown, Harvard, that is like the... What percent? I mean, that is like the 1% of the 1% even getting in. So isn't that like an easy bar to reference because everyone knows it, but that's not really like the schools that most kids are getting into, correct? I just want to make sure I reestablish
100%,
that.
100%. Okay. 100%. You know, if students have those highly competitive schools on their list, I always want to let them know the limitations for applying early decisions somewhere else. If you have one of those schools that has a restrictive early action policy, you're not bound to attend that school. That's not a restrictive early decision policy. It's early action. You have as much time as you want to accept that offer up until May, and you can apply to any other school regular decision. But what it is saying is that those colleges feel pretty sure that if you were to get in there, that you would say yes to them. So they're not going to really worry about where else you apply regular decision.
The egos of those schools. Just want to smack them across the face, don't you?
I want to take a minute to kind of frame out the financial side of this equation for families. I mean, at the, at the free end of, the equation, there's military academies, right? But I imagine they're very, very hard to get into.
Yes.
And then at the high end, we've got, ultra expensive universities. I mean, what does the range look like? Where do our state schools fall in?
Mm-hmm. Many of the private universities on the high end are $80,000-$85,000 a year,
cow.
Including room and board and fees. UConn, which is our state school, is about $35,000, including room and board. And then there's also state universities are lower cost. So James Madison in Virginia, Virginia Tech are about $50,000. It's important for families that are looking to have a diverse list to consider some out-of-state schools, if that's an interest, that are lower cost. Our in-state school, also merit scholarships at private schools, which essentially are a discount. In a way to get students to come. So not all of the colleges offer merit aid, but the ones that do, it's really to try to entice the student to attend the college.
Right. And to what extent do they offer merit aid? I mean, is it up to and including 100% of that cost, or is it very small?
Yes, sometimes it is. I mean, it could range anywhere from $5,000 or $10,000 to $40,000 or $50,000.
And what's the process for accessing that?
Often there isn't.
Yeah, sometimes they're just applying to college, and with the acceptance letter, they'll get a letter notifying them of their merit scholarship. So I've had students...
It's just offered without being asked for.
Because it's a way for the colleges, again, right, the colleges don't want to make offers to students who are not going to say yes. And so this is a way to entice students to attend.
So what kinds of students are getting merit scholarships? Is it with just great grades? Is it particular fields that are looking?
I had a student with a GPA below 3.0 that got some great partial merit scholarships from several schools.
Oh, yeah, so absolutely.
Can you explain that?
And that, I think, is important. We've been talking about some of the elite schools.
Yes.
But for the students who are a 3.0 or even below, where parents think, oh, wow, what options are there for my student? There really are a lot. There's a lot of great schools that are not ultra selective, and sometimes they'll offer merit aid. So I've had, for my students this year with merit aid, I had students get about $20,000 a year at Loyola Maryland, Providence, University of Denver, Sacred Heart here in Fairfield. So there's a number of great options.
And it, like I said, is it tied directly to grades or is it to other factors?
I think it's just who they're hoping would accept their offer. So not exactly to grades, although some colleges have, and some of the state universities have a grid. You can look on their website and see, based on your GPA and your test score, what your merit scholarship will be.
But it may be for your profile too. Like they may just like the fact that you do X, Y, and Z
could be
in your free time.
Right.
Yep. Okay.
Right. And that you may contribute to that on the college community. Yeah.
Yeah. And that actually kind of leads to another question I had, which was related to particular majors and fields. And, you know, given that it is so hard to get into some of these schools, are there particular majors that are, you know, looking for more, let's say, female applicants or, you know, from certain parts of the country or anything unusual like that?
Well, I think computer science is unusual right now because it's so selective. And it may be because there are not a lot of professors to keep up with the demand. But there are some colleges where I've had parents look at, say, I think University of Washington was an example, that their acceptance rate was fairly high, around 50%, but their computer science acceptance rate was about 4 or 5%. And that's true at some other state universities, too. So we see really different outcomes for computer science. And that's something that's important for those students to know in building their list, to not look at the overall acceptance rate, but to try to get computer science specific.
Wow.
Sorry to interrupt. And then, and also business can be more selective too, or they may look more at the math score, math course selection, grade, standardized testing. So there are some differences with majors.
Okay. I mean, and this then leads to another question, which was, you know, for me as a parent of kids coming up through the system, you know, my biggest concern is getting them jobs, right? Like having them be self-sustaining, independent human beings. So are there colleges that you see doing a better job placing students in jobs afterwards? Like, or is that something you don't really follow?
Sometimes parents ask me about that, or students will ask me about that. And you can always find out that data through the college. They will tell you the percentage of students that are employed within 6 months of graduation. And often that includes the percentage of students who are going on to graduate school.
Right.
And you would, you know, those numbers often look very, very good.
I was going to say, like, it's almost like grade inflation, like college job offer inflation. Like,
right.
I mean, do I trust the same colleges promoting there? Of course they're going to have
and we don't,
the best foot forward.
We probably
there.
Don't see our students so clearly in their career progression, but I do hear a lot about internships that they get through friends and other places. Sometimes it's through the career services offices. And it depends, because there are students who are very motivated to work and to get internships, and maybe they weren't the same person that was a great student. So sometimes the great academic student who's at a top school isn't getting internships and really focusing on career, and the other type of person might be. So there's not necessarily a rhyme or reason that there's a certain college that's going to help with a career path.
This is internships during college or
during
in high school? Because you mentioned internships earlier, and I didn't know if that meant in high school.
During college, there's some studies that the number of internships relates to career success down the road. So there are students that have 4 internships in college. 3 or 4 is pretty standard, I'd say.
What are the hot majors right now? Computer science?
I see a lot of students applying to business and computer science and engineering.
Is nursing taking off right now, or doctor, or med school?
Well, med school is graduate school, right?
So we wouldn't know, but biology is a popular major too.
Yep.
I see less in the humanities. I see very few English and history now. Do you?
Is it shifting? Have you seen it change?
I guess it's been a while that people are concerned with a career path type of a major.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I feel like we've been hearing a lot for, you know, at least the last 10 years about, you know, back what we talked about earlier, is college even worth it anymore? I mean, mm-hmm. to spend $500,000 or whatever, sending my kid to get a major that doesn't really get them a job. Why are we doing this? Right. And has that put any downward pressure on tuition? Or
no,
not at all.
If you look at the numbers, more and more people are applying to colleges.
Right.
So it's, you know, even though people are saying, oh my gosh, this is so expensive. And, you know, is it going to be worth it? People mm-hmm. are still competing right. for those spots.
Yeah. But it's harder and harder to recover the cost of college as the tuition just keeps going through the roof.
Yeah. I think one other thing to say there is the need-based financial aid in the FAFSA is pretty straightforward, so we don't need to get into it a lot, but every college is mandated to have a net price calculator, which is online. So parents can go online and in about 5 minutes put some basic information and get an estimate of whether they would qualify for need-based aid.
Thank you. That's helpful.
While we're on the idea of like financial aid and like going to college and the usefulness of majors, let me stick to majors first. Do you encourage students that you see in their later high school years going to college with a purpose of what major they're going to study? Or do you encourage them to keep an open mind and find that major within those 4 years?
Well, I think sometimes students are already committed. If they've applied to an engineering school or a business school, they're not in that phase where they're considering a lot of different options. But the ones that are going to a College of Arts and Science, then that's part of the program and its nature. They're going to take a lot of different courses and declare a major sophomore year. So it's not so much for us to encourage, really, but that's often the path they've chosen, would you say?
Yeah, I'm listening to what my clients are interested in. And certainly if they're very undecided, then I want to make sure that that college has a lot of different opportunities for students. And even when they feel like they're decided, I still want to make sure that there are a lot of opportunities, because one of the things about students, and teenagers and adolescents is that they're changing their mind a lot, and that's normal. So I think it's really important to manage your expectations about, oh, my kid is 17, they should know what they're going to do as a career, because it's not necessarily a reasonable expectation.
It's not, right.
Well, that would be my fear. Your kid, like, you know, comes in with his parent and they're so set saying, okay, you know, I want to be in, let's go back to computer science. We've used that. So I mean, I'm set on computer science. And then they go and they take a year of computer science at one of these schools. And they're like, I actually hate this.
Right.
Like, but you've already applied to the, you know, the engineering program of a school. And is it, I don't know. I can't.
It's important. I recommend all of my students that are interested in engineering to do a summer program. There's a number of 4 or 5 day programs. There's one at UConn that's actually really low cost, where they learn about the different types of engineering, what it means to study that type of engineering, and what the career path is. And I've had students come back from that confident and feeling good, and I've had others come back and say, I don't want to do that. And
right.
you think that's great. Now you know, and you're not going to commit yourself to that.
Well, go ahead.
Well, in what scenario, on that similar path, in what scenario would you recommend a student that maybe a gap year might be
an
option?
That was my question.
Or that you might say to them also are looking at alternative programs.
Mm-hmm.
Alternative programs meaning?
Well, you know, we talk about going to services or even going like straight into like an apprenticeship, going into like trade school.
Yeah.
Even going into like you go an internship, you can go like, you know, GE used to run a great program back in the day. I mean, that was for, you know, college grads, but you go in, you work as an intern GE, and then you go right to a job. You could skip.
I heard the insurance industry is doing a lot of that now. Like, mm-hmm.
you
instead
know,
of college.
They may need a bachelor's for that though.
So in what circumstance do you guys like, would you recommend that to a student? I mean, and by the way, I would think of a parent's coming to you, side note, saying, help my kid here, like, you know, get application, that you would be a little reticent to say, let's consider trade program or, I don't know, that might not go over as well.
I'm not at all.
I mean,
I'm really direct. I'm a very direct person. And so when I see a student who doesn't seem to me, you know, I really ask the question, is this what you want to do? And I think it's fantastic if students, it's not my job to convince students that college is right for them. It's my job to help families who are interested in college understand the process and work through the process. But I think there are all kinds of different paths to being a successful contributing adult in our communities. And so college is not the only way.
Right.
Well, I will say, I mean, I spent 2 years chasing an athletic dream before going to college. And I, the same Taylor, you know, at 18, and then, you know, when I finally went to college, I was two different students mm-hmm. entirely, because by the time I made the choice to actually go to school, to walk through the door and then sit down and focus on school, I cared. Like right. I wasn't
and that's
daydreaming
what we see.
About something else. Like, well, yeah. It was really good for me.
And you see that a lot with the gap year, where they're taking a year to do something structured and independent, maybe in another culture, experiential learning, and they really grow and become mature and are really ready for college when they
yeah.
get back.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's a benefit to the college, too, to have Absolutely. Somebody who's had this enriched experience before right. they come.
And is a gap year, like, is that part of when a kid can do a deferred?
Right. They can be accepted to a college and send a deposit, commit to attend there and ask for a deferral. Or they can go on a gap year or to a PG year at a boarding school and apply from there. So they have either option they can do.
But let me be the pessimist here or the devil advocate. And what a lot of people would say, like, when you're taking a gap year, PG year, isn't that like a nice soft term for parents who kids have the luxury to take more time versus, like, my dad would have said, Liz, get your butt in gear, you know, go to school, you're going to pay, and then you have 4 more years to go until you get a job.
Like, but what parent wants to spend the money to have their kid not care?
Right. Well, so that's the bigger question. Then maybe college isn't the choice then as well. But like around here, I feel like there's that pressure though.
There is that pressure. And I really try to talk about that too, because you can do college 2 years after high school. You can do college in 6 years. You can do college. Right. There's not just, okay, you graduate from Darien High School and you go to college and you graduate in 4 years and you get your job. That might work for a lot of people and it's great, but it's just not the only way.
Right. I feel like that's changing though, by the way. I feel like that was like, I hear that story less. Mm-hmm. That's still the dominating narrative. Like you graduate high school, then you go to a 4-year college, then you get, that's a dominant narrative. I get that. But more and more I hear kids taking alternative paths and having really cool independent thought results coming from that.
Yeah.
Right. And I think we do hear more of students coming home freshman year that they're not happy. They either transfer, sometimes they're home in October and they don't go back. So we've all heard of that. And I think there's more of that now, and it can lead to new opportunities for them. Mm-hmm. It's not always a stall. It's just a pivot to something else.
Speaking of a transfer, I have heard of a strategy that some kids use is they get and go into a community college or a lesser college for their freshman year, and then they transfer their sophomore year because it's easier to get into a more competitive school your sophomore year than a freshman year. Is that true? Is that a true fact? And is that a strategy that people utilize? And what do you think about that as a possible strategy?
I don't know if I'd consider it a strategy, but often students do transfer. They're not happy where they are. I wouldn't encourage a student to go to college with the thought to transfer before they even get there. But it can be easier at some colleges to transfer.
Yeah, I think you're dealing with more of an unknown. There's a lot of data about freshman college admissions, less data about transfer admissions. And so it's a little bit more of an unknown. That being said, you know, there are definitely state agreements with community colleges where you can go to community college for 2 years. And then, you know, if as long as you've achieved a certain GPA, you can be automatically admitted to the college. So that's a great money saving.
Yeah, going back to the financial aid, that's a great option, right?
Right.
You get 2 years community, then you graduate. Then, so you could even do like a you know, you could go to Norwalk Community College here for 2 years, transfer possibly to UConn if you got the grades and option, and you can
You're saving a lot of money in that process.
Or you can go to UConn Stanford, which is a full 4-year UConn degree, and it doesn't even distinguish UConn Stanford versus UConn at Storrs. So that's very close. People can live at home, go to UConn Stanford. It's low cost. Transfer.
Yeah. What is the admissions rate for UConn for Connecticut residents? And is it any different than their general?
I'm not sure, actually, because I don't have many students interested.
I know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Interesting. And then one other random question. Sorry to take us off the path, but summer jobs. Mm-hmm. How highly are they valued as opposed to, you know, volunteering with, who knows, some butterfly project? I'm sure that's also cool.
Well, if you're really into butterflies, then volunteering for a butterfly project is great. No, I think what I'm trying to say when I answer it that way is that I'm trying to encourage students to do things that they really enjoy, that they're going to really learn from. I think jobs can be awesome, and there's like a huge benefit in that. What you're thinking about is, how are you conveying your experience, what you learned about yourself during this process, during that job in the summer or that experience in the summer, to the colleges. It's not about like whether or not you did one thing or another. It's how it was to you and how well you convey that.
Okay.
I want to give a shout out tonight to our sponsor again, Riley Volvo Cars of Stamford. These guys are more than just a car dealership, and they treat their customers like guests. And you know what? They're a local guy. You know, guys that run them, Riley's.
They're friends.
They're friends. They're local Darien residents. They're one of our own. So take the hassle of car shopping, car buying, and go to a friend, someone you can trust, and have that experience.
Can I just say something on the Volvo front?
Yes. Do you have a Volvo?
Yes, and that's all I drive, and all my family drives.
People love their Volvos.
I love my Volvo. I've only driven Volvos.
Yeah. My family's the same way.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, then you look no further. Just okay. Go down the street. You've got one mile down. Yeah.
I wanted to ask a random question. Social media, after you've been accepted, are the colleges watching it? Can you get yourself in trouble?
No, I hear sometimes, but then I'm also not sure how they connect the social media with the applicant. So I'm unclear on that.
I think if there's, if anybody ever reports something it, yeah, to a college that says that, you know, the student who you've accepted has done something inappropriate on social media, the college has an obligation to look. And right, if it's there, then it can be definitely detrimental. When I work with students, I always say in the very beginning, if you have anything on your social media that you wouldn't want a grandparent to see, take it off. Right. And so I would say all through the college process, after you've been accepted, if you have anything on there that you wouldn't want a grandparent to see, take it off.
And I should have started with the application process. Are they looking through social media when they're considering you as an applicant?
I'm not 100% sure, but I would be, I think it's really valuable to just be aware that they could.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
I want to remind myself that we're talking to you guys. It's really a luxury and neat to have this perspective you guys have as independent consultants. So I want to make sure, like, when we have an audience listening, like, parents don't feel like, okay, now I need to go hire a consultant, because there are all these things now that right, we just talked about, and it almost feels stressful to me. But I guess, let me put this into a question. Can I go about doing this as a parent? Can I go, yes, but, and is it going to be a full-time job for me? How do I catch up?
No, it should not be a full-time job for you. Whenever I do presentations for families, for parents and large, yeah, groups, one of the things I always say is, no one in this room needs to hire a college admissions consultant. You're going to be fine. Your kids are going to go to college. They're going to be fine. My job is to help reduce some of the anxiety and stress around this process, dispel the myths, help your son or daughter with the process. But nobody needs to hire us in order for your kid to be successful in the college admissions, right, process.
There's a lot of free resources, and I think it's important for parents to take some interest in it and do some research and help to guide their student. And it could be in terms of asking them to think about majors in college and looking at the costs, engaging with the school counselor, even reading things online. There's a lot of great tips. I mentioned the College Essay Guy site. Right. He has things on how to build a list. There's really a lot out there. I think it's just a matter of spending some time and digging in.
And you have a Facebook page, Kristen, that you've created, that where you put up a lot, right, of information, right?
Right. So we have a Darien New Canaan College Counseling Facebook page. So parents ask questions there of the community and they get responses, and it's been good. They'll ask about course selection or summer programs, things like that.
Okay. And Dina, you also have, I've been to your website too. You've got a lot of information and resources up there as well.
We do. And I'd love to talk about this. I love to give advice. And I do it in almost any forum I can. I'm speaking at the Wilton Library in October. I did last year as well. I do presentations for groups in New York City. I love to sort of share the information about this because I can see the anxiety and stress leave families' faces when I clear up some myths. And I think people come in really, really tense around this process. But I don't, I think it's a stressful process, but it's not as crazy as everybody thinks.
Yeah. Well, and then to give people some idea of how many, like to get the sense that like not everyone's working with an independent counselor. I mean, you guys take 10 kids a class, 15? What's the number?
Yeah, more like 15.
15, Kristen?
And 12.
12. Okay, so that's, yeah, and out of a class, and out of, and those are all over Fairfield County. You're talking all these different schools. So that's a very small number. And I want to put that out there so people don't think like, okay, everyone of my friends is seeing a college counselor right now, or, you know, an independent counselor, a consultant or advisor, and I'm the one not doing it. Right. Okay, that's good to know. Do you guys also do interview preparation, and is that necessary?
I do.
Ooh.
And I think it is necessary depending on the kids. Some kids are better at it than others. And I've had some clients who've been terrified about that. And just with some sort of guidance and some prep have done really, really beautifully in that and been very successful.
Yeah, okay. I agree. Although there are fewer colleges that offer mm-hmm. interviews now. So the typical student does not have any interviews, but then some of them do.
I actually find that the question I ask my students to ask the colleges is, if I interview, is it used as an evaluative part of the application? As opposed to, do you offer interviews? And if a college says yes, then I want that student to prepare for that interview. And really that just means being able to talk about why that college is a good fit for them and being able to talk about what they liked best in high school and who they are. So it's not complicated, but it can feel nerve-wracking to students before they do it. So that's why I do the prep.
What about letters of recommendation portfolio? Do you make recommendations on how to put together a comprehensive package of those and who to go to? Or is that all independently done by students?
Well, some of the students at Darien High, sometimes the teachers will give students some questions to answer. It might be, what was the most challenging part of this class, or what's a project you really enjoyed? So I wouldn't say it's a portfolio that they put together, but sometimes the teachers have questions and their answers will help them in shaping the letter.
Yeah, I guide students on choosing and helping them to choose recommenders by saying, who are the teachers? I like them to pick two. Who are the teachers where you really connected with during your junior year? And so I talk to students about this in the beginning of junior year, where you're really connecting, where you're really enjoying the classwork, where you're able to sort of understand the nuances of what you're learning and maybe apply it from one class to another. That's really sophisticated thinking. Hold on to your best pieces of work. So that when you go back and ask that teacher at the end of the year, that you can explain to them why you're asking them. And also I have them give them, you know, either a resume or a list of who they are outside of the classroom so that that teacher can see a little bit more about that student.
Smart. And how many letters do you usually need to pull together? How many letters of recommendation do you need as part of your college applications?
Two.
Mm-hmm. Just two.
Right.
And you, and Dina, you said you recommend teachers for both those, not like a teacher and an outside source, or?
There are two academic recommendations are required by many colleges. And then some colleges, not all colleges, will accept a supplemental letter of support. So okay. Doesn't have the same name as a recommender, but it could be somebody else who knows that student in a different facet. Maybe it's a dance teacher or a coach or somebody who was, you know, working with that kid during a volunteer position in the summer, who can really show something different than the academic work of that student.
Right. And there's one other letter, which is the school counselor.
Right.
So that's
got it. One. Okay.
What's the, can you give a quick overview of the timeline from, like, when should they start researching the schools? When should they start visiting? When should they, when do they start writing essays? When do they apply early? When do they apply regular? Sorry.
Oh, no, that's a big, long timeline.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on the student. The application itself, a typical time to work on it is the summer before senior year.
Oh, okay.
So that's when they're talking about essays and activity lists. What goes into it before in evaluating colleges, that can really depend on the student and their motivation and interest.
Well, that's...
But do these applications, to your point, Taylor, do these applications, they're looking at kids' body of work starting their freshman year.
Yes.
So really freshman year, you're starting to build a right. college application resume of sorts.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
I start working with many students in ninth grade, and I actually work with students through the first semester of their freshman year of college for any transition issues. So the process can be long.
Yeah. Well, and actually that's my wrap-up question is, and it might sound ridiculous, but what advice would you give the parent of an elementary school student, of a middle school student, and of a high school student? I mean, granted, there's different parts of high school, but...
Elementary school student, middle school student, enjoy your school, do the things that you love, do not even talk about college.
Yeah,
do not talk about it.
Right? Even through middle school.
Even correct. Through middle school, okay. correct?
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. And then high school, I think it can depend a little bit on the student, and parents can follow their student's lead. There are those in ninth grade that are really ready to dig in and do some research and figure things out, and there are others that are just getting used to high school, and it would be too stressful or not in their interest to think about college yet.
Right. Childhood and adolescence is really short. You have a lot of time to be an adult, so I think it's really important to recognize that. You know, some kids are ready and some kids are not. And the kids that aren't ready now, give them some time.
I love that advice. Thank you.
Yeah, guys, this has been really eye-opening speaking with you. It was stressful for a little bit thinking about all that goes into this process. Now I understand why there are books and essays and speakers. And,
but I also understand why they give people peace of mind, right? Like I feel better.
Totally. I do too. Like, yeah, you guys have given us a good roadmap for understanding this. I also don't feel intimidated in tackling this journey myself as a parent if I choose to do it solo, which I think many do.
Right. Right. Yes.
Good.
Well, thank you're a wealth of knowledge and a gift to our community. Thank you for spending the time with us.
Oh, we loved it. I loved it.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And for all our listeners, if you like this episode or any episode we've done, please rate us on Apple, Spotify, Podbean, or whatever listening platform you use.
And stay tuned for our next episodes. We're hoping to bring you an update on another large real estate project happening in town and profile a locally owned business that's killing it, making a splash on the national stage. Thanks for tuning in as always, guys. Take care.